Fred Film Radio, Venice Film Festival, Italy.
Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin. Please switch off your mobile phones. And so on.
Like we hear every single day, every single screening.
Yes, Cinephile, you are listening and watching Big Fred Venice from a different studio this time, because we have two studios. We are probably the only broadcasters, aside from Rai, that has two different studios on in the festival area, because we are right in the midst of the festival area.
Yeah, we are in the street here.
Exactly.
In the street close to the Palace of Cinema.
And we can see people walking past here. We get a better idea of the atmosphere from here. So we may occasionally be distracted by some stuff that is happening, but it's all live, so it's all good. I'm Matt Micucci.
I am Angela Cerbi, as usual, here with you for the second last time.
And it's been the busiest day because, as we anticipated yesterday, Angelo and I are the only ones left. We're basically trying to cover every remaining film that we've got to cover. I think we still have a couple of interviews tomorrow too, including some couple of live streams, right?
Yeah.
But you had a few, you know, we had great guests this morning. You also had some big stars. Matt Damon was sitting beside you this morning.
Yes.
What was he like?
It was quiet at the very beginning, but then very, very passionate about for the question. So he talked a lot.
Yeah,
he talked much more than I was expecting. So it was good.
Yeah.
And the press agent was not that happy because they wanted to cut it short. As you know, the guy was talking too much. So
this is pretty much what we got to deal with all the time. But what can we do, you know? And in fact, as we have said before, it seems to me, and you probably agree, whoever we've had up in the radio, the other studio, you know, they would have liked to stay more.
Yeah, yeah, they would have.
And I'm
more.
Sure that Matt Damon would have also liked to stay.
Because the conversation was taking a good.
Yeah.
Good swing. But anyway.
We can't talk about that film. We'll talk about this tomorrow. We've got plenty of films to talk about, especially the ones that screened yesterday, and we can finally talk about, because there's an embargo, and before then we can't. Let's start with you, Angelo. So there's a couple of films that we could talk about, but there was one that you made sure that would be on the list. So we'll start with that one. It's titled The Accusation, and it's actually presented at a competition.
Yeah.
It's by Ivan Attal.
Ivan Attal, yes.
And all I have for the synopsis is a young man is accused of raping a woman. So very serious.
So basically, this is, to be very, 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 very short. But the thing is that there is this couple that is split. Charlotte Gainsbourg is the mother of this guy, who is a 22-year-old guy that studies at Stanford in U.S. is back in Paris because there is an event that is involving his father that he has to attend to, and his mother introduced to him his new fiancé, boyfriend, whatever, and he met the daughter of this man, and they are convinced to go out together, and then something really bad happened.
Right.
So it's not the classic film about rape, but it's a film about rape seen from the eye of one protagonist that is both is involved in both from both parts, because you know basically the character of Charlotte Gainsbourg she is the mother of the rapist, and she is the godmother, not godmother, the fiance of the father of the girl who is raped. So she's in a very weird situation. And the film is the beginning of this story starts when the two met. Then there is this action that is rape that we do not see, and then we have the versions of the two parts, the two sides, ending on a trial in court. And it's really, really interesting that the point of view of the narrative changes, every swings back and forth from the male to the female point of view, and at the end he is accused but and he is sentenced, but it's not for the same reasons, depending on the point of view of it. I mean, I'm getting a little bit stuck here, but it's a really interesting film because it's really modern, it's really complex, but it's really classically made. Okay. So it's a very classical French film, very classical in terms of framing, of direction, great actors.
Yes.
And the lead actor is the son of the director, who is the boyfriend, the lover of Charlotte Gainsbourg, which plays the mother, and the mother of the girl who is raped is the mother of the lead actor. So it's a really weird...
Yeah, intricate situation.
Yeah, intricate situation between outside of the screen and inside of the screen.
Does it stumble upon that? It sounds like it would be a challenge for the director to handle
It did not stumble. It made it through very well, and it managed to keep the balance in a very good product. Probably it could have told us more,
right?
Because everything is very, very clear just at the very end of it.
Sure,
but it makes sense.
Well, that was out of competition. Let's move on to the competition. I think one of the major films that was going to be presented here, at least as far as you know, we've been hearing about it, is Jan P. Matuszynski's "Leave No Traces," because it was it deals with an event that happens in 83 in Poland. And without getting too stuck into detail, it's basically about two young men who are stopped for no reason, really, by the authorities. I believe it was during martial law of Poland, or just after martial law in Poland. And anyways, one of them is brutally beaten by the police and eventually dies shortly thereafter. His friend is the only witness to the brutality, and he is as the only witness, he is also kind of the center of attention of this story, where the Polish authorities kind of apply loads of pressures on him and the people around him so that he stays quiet, and that the beating is not is not attributed to these authorities and therefore the politicians and all of that stuff of the time. Again, I'm not going to get too stuck into the story. There's obviously some really detailed parts that talk about Polish history, but to me what was really frightening about it is that we see these things regularly in different parts of the world too. The director whom I interviewed yesterday made reference to George Floyd. And so it's pretty much the same thing. We're seeing that with the trial, and this is what this movie is about, except it happens to be set in 83, and it also happens to, kind of to the detriment of the movie, to be almost 3 hours long. Because whereas the first part of the film, the first hour of the film, is super intense, and I was talking with some other people who also thought the same way, including, the great film critic Jay Weisberg, is great, and I was so super excited about it. All of a sudden, the film just, I think, crumbles under the weight of the many lives and different stories that it tries to tell, because it tries to look at this event from too many perspectives and probably tries to be too respectful of the different perspectives. We all know that these things are super complicated. Does it really make for a good film, though? I don't know, and maybe not, But I still praise the intentions, and really the director Matuszynski is an awesome person. I think that the interview I recorded with him was probably the best of the festival. So I'm almost reluctant to kind of say that this film gets a pass, but it's not one of the best that I've seen.
Well, normally getting. Being able to handle and to measure 3 hours of a movie of this on these issues is not very easy.
Yeah, I think maybe to quote maybe a classic filmmaker. I don't know. I kept thinking of Francesco Rosi. So he would have been. He was awesome at telling these kinds of stories. Yeah. Or Andrzej Wajda. Yeah,
but they would have never told the story in 3 hours.
Yeah, probably not. Although they did have very long movies, they probably would have tried something a little more creative than this film. But anyways, remains a good film, but not one of the best I've seen, I'm being honest.
Well, we have to be honest. We're here for that.
Of course, yes. And now, moving on to, I guess, another competition film. I'm laughing because I wrote down Venezia 75 here, which is completely...
Oh, you wait.
I kind of do, actually. I was more innocent there. Well, speaking of innocence, this film is by Damiano and Fabio D'Innocenzo.
D'Innocenzo.
It's called America Latina.
America Latina. And it's a thriller drama thriller.
By the way, Angelo, if you want to the synopsis is like one whole paragraph, so maybe I'll leave that to you.
No, well, it's really. I don't like to say the synopsis for this film because it needs some mystery.
Right. This is the film that they didn't want really people to be talking about.
Yeah, they really. This is one of. I think the only film in the whole festival they did not have a press release.
Yeah.
A press book or nothing.
That's
so
strange.
There were some images, a very weird and short trailer, and that's it. Mm. Because actually, which makes sense after you see the film and after you talk to them, it makes sense because the film is really, it should be the story of this man who is a dentist, who has a gorgeous wife, two gorgeous women, he lives in a nice house, he has everything that a man can have, but at some point cracks, and everything is going the wrong way, but it's not as clear and it's as easy as it looks like.
Right.
And I'm going to stop here, I'm going to reveal too much. But they wanted the movie to be upsetting as they were upset while they were writing it, and they didn't want us to know too much because you need to find out by yourself and more. You need to give your own explanation at the end, and every single explanation changes depending on your personal story.
Right.
As an audience member.
Really?
So it's really, no, because I mean, I was talking about it earlier in the round table about Italian cinema that we had, that I was talking after the film with four different people, and there were four different versions, four different ideas, four different, lectures of the film. It's very cinematic. The Innocenzo brothers, they know how to use the camera, and they're very, very creative and really daring. So they don't care to risk.
Right.
To do and to show you something in a strange way. And they don't want, and they absolutely do not want you to be comfortable in your seat. And this goal has been reached completely because I told him I was moving on my seat for like 90 minutes because you are disturbed, but you're annoyed, but you want to see, you want to understand, but you don't understand, or you think to have understood and then you didn't. So it's really intense, and he has a great, like, talk about length. It's 90 minutes and every single minute counts.
Wow.
There's nothing was like too much or too long or too, you know. So it's it would be fun to see how it's going to be received in the cinemas. I met one of them earlier today, and he told me, you know, we crashed Venice because either they love it or they want to beat us up.
reaction. Yeah, this is the street.
This is the reaction that you normally have, and this film is it's a fascinating movie, but you need to be ready to be challenged and left with no explanation.
Wow.
You have to work for that.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
And
it's really interesting.
I got to say, I am intrigued. But regardless of the fact that, you know, the filmmakers might have their own intentions with this film, you know, we also talk about the film industry, especially here in Venice. You know, we got lots of different guests. What do you think about the move on a marketing level, or I guess just on a promotional level, of what they've decided to do, obviously, with this film? Is like to reveal as little as possible. Like we said, no press kit, you know, a couple of still images and very cryptic messages.
But, you know, they are turning into the golden boy, the new golden boys of the Italian cinema. So they had two, this is their third third film. They have two films before the first one was a huge success. A total sleeper. Nobody was ever thought of that movie to be that successful. The second one won in Berlin the best screenplay. So they are totally on the rise, and they have such a stubbornness and such a personal voice that it would be really stupid not to go with the flow with them, you know. Right, okay. So it makes sense that they decided to do this weird move, and they are, you know, they can make they are very, they risk a lot, as I said. They yes. probably are going to make mistakes,
yeah.
But they have to make mistakes. If they're right to make mistakes as being that young and having that potential, so you have to use your potential as far as you go and you do stuff, at the end of the day you will find sure. your path, no?
Yeah.
No, it's a mix. They are lucky also to find producers that want to help them to be that daring, because sure. it's not that obvious, you know.
I
normally
gotcha.
Potentially they want to be safe,
yeah,
and so far they find producers that they are risky.
Very good, very good for them. And all right, so moving on to another film. This one is from the Orizzonti section, which, as we've said in the past few episodes, has had many gems of the Venice Film Festival, especially this year. I am going to be talking about another one. I think it's a film that I really, really liked. It's titled El Otro Tom. Now, obviously, it would be very easy to translate it as The Other Tom, but the director made a point. The co-director, Rodrigo Pla, who co-directed the film with Laura Santullo, made a point to say, hey, we actually want to keep this title because half of it is definitely in the Spanish language, and the other, and Tom is a very, very American name. Because I don't know, because obviously the lead protagonists are from are Latinos, and it's set in the border between Texas and I guess, I don't know. I'm not good at geography. But anyways, you get the idea. The film is talks about a mother who may lose custody of her son because she refuses to medicate for ADHD. Obviously, then it talks about how there's a tendency in the United States to over-medicate kids who show the slightest signs of psychiatric or, you know, mental or... you know, all these sorts of disorders.
Yeah, well,
and definitely the filmmaker seems to take a stance and say, hey, we need to talk about this. We should take it easy because it can also be, you know, it can be wrong. It can be the wrong way to go about it. And also it can kind of be detrimental to the development of the child who perhaps isn't understood and should be understood.
Yeah.
Anyways, but it's not a dark film. It's a beautifully sensible, sensitive film. And it's very simple, but beautiful in its simplicity. Again, very touching. It's a story of a single mother. So, you know, you see the particular characteristics of this type of complicated situation, but also you understand that every situation is different. So when people talk about these things, they have a tendency to generalize, but this story, for example, shows that there's so many different aspects and elements that differentiate one story from the other, and every one of these stories should be taken as an individual thing. And again, this is something that it goes against the way people tend to talk about these topics that are very delicate. It's wonderful.
Really, it's really weird and interesting. One thing that you said, you said many other times during our little chats here,
yes.
that you saw a lot of films that are very simple but yeah. very beautiful.
Yes.
And not always simplicity leads to beauty.
Yeah.
But which is... a good sign for young directors to acknowledge that there is a possibility of making very wonderful movies without a hyper narrative structure, but something very simple and very neat and very plain.
Yeah.
But you need to find the switch
yeah.
to make this simplicity
Yeah, absolutely. Gorgeous. You know, you don't need the big bucks to make a film. You know, you don't need to even try to replicate what the blockbusters are doing.
Yeah, exactly.
All you need is a story, and all you need is your vision, and to some extent also the ability to not compromise that vision, because mm-hmm. it's very difficult to do that, especially when other people are giving you money to make the film. So, but it seems that as far as El Otro Tom is concerned, they have this ability to treat a very delicate subject matter in a very mature, sensible, and touching way that I felt was, again, simple but completely effective. And a gem, another gem.
And this is what the festivals are for, you know?
Yes.
Let us find out and discover those gems among the quantity of movies that are produced all over the planet.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've talked about so many films, and I guess, you know, for now, we'll just leave it at that, Angela. Yeah. How about that?
Yeah, we have other titles to talk about tomorrow.
I was going to say we kind of ended it with a simple film, but tomorrow I've actually got two films that are not so simple. One of them is a huge, large scale gangster action epic, and another one is we'll talk about it tomorrow.
Three hours medieval war film.
Right.
So
yeah, there's plenty to talk about tomorrow.
To talk about tomorrow.
We'll still be with you because we will be back for the final episode of Big Fred Venice, which is I'm not going to lie to you, it's kind of a relief because I need some sleep. I need some sleep. I really do.
Oh yeah.
We'll be back tomorrow. Awards tomorrow too. Do you want to say very quickly in a couple of seconds who are your maybe three films that you think could win
in the competition?
Yeah, very quickly.
Well, I can tell you three titles that to me are going to get something. Mm. I don't know which one, which kind of award. I think that The King of Laughter will get something,
right.
And I think that Happening will get something.
Okay,
and also probably The Card Counter. Those are the three potential.
Yes.
I can tell you a fourth, which is the Paolo Sorrentino film. The Paolo Sorrentino film.
The Paolo Sorrentino film. So The King of Laughter is more likely to win big than Paolo Sorrentino.
I don't know. I think that both movies will get something. I don't know yet what they're going to get.
Final thing. It just came up to me. Do you think that the president of the jury really has a lot of say in the final decision, or is it a group effort?
Well, I don't know. I think he's a very nice guy. So it would be a very nice and understanding president. But if they work like any other jury works, the president has a double vote, so
yes,
it can actually change the things if they are stuck into a decision. Probably.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, then, taking that into consideration, I will have to let you know who I think might be the wild card tomorrow. But with all that being said, let's keep it at that.
Remember that now it's like 7:10, and they have already decided. So somebody knows already who won.
They've decided.
Yeah.
So they decide the day before. I didn't know that, Angelo.
They decide.
We just revealed.
They decide the morning before of the day before.
Well,
because there is all a question. It's all a question of. Then they have to re-invite of protocol, calling the guests, the winners, and blah blah blah.
So, all right. Yeah. So,
So somebody knows, but we
somebody knows.
Know
we're gonna find out. No, we're not gonna find out. But in the meantime, guys. Okay, so that's all for today. So it's been great. I've been Matt Micucci.
I'm Angelo Cerbi.
So till the next time, stay healthy, stay safe, stay strong. Most importantly, stay cinephile. And stay tuned to Fred Film Radio, the festival
insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.